I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a long-awaited reunion episode. We do one reunion episode every 2 months of Serious Issues. It's me, Andrew.
But in between, we break up completely. Not that we're a couple, but you know what I mean. We don't talk.
Podcast couple. We literally, the only conversations we have are, can you record this week? Not really. Can you record next week? Maybe. Then we forget about it. And then, yeah, it's a great relationship. but look, I think we're both in a position now where potentially starting next year, we could start meeting once a month in a real life, actual existing location, not over Zoom.
Yeah, that would be thrilling. A huge secret is that I'm pretty bad with technology, and it always takes Levins a while of coaching me through how to set up like the microphone and the recording stuff. So he's been very patient with me.
No, it's fun. I mean, I look forward to, I can't just read a comic and leave it at that. I'm like, I put it in a special bag, and the bag stays full until we record an episode. Then I release the comics from the bag.
Empty the bag. Yeah, that's lovely. That's a beautiful symbol.
So on today's show, I thought we could review some comics that we've read recently. Most excitingly, I've read not just all of X of Swords, but I read every single X-Men comic leading up to X of Swords, because I kind of dropped off since Hox Pox.
It's the only way to do it, man.
Yeah, well, otherwise I'd be so lost. I kind of treated it like a manga and just burned through all of it. It was so much fun. So I'm very excited to
talk. It's so disposable in a way that's like very nice.
I can't wait to talk X-Men, not just with you, but also Rebecca and Jake have agreed to return for a deep dive into the X of Swords event.
Because you know my review is going to be vague.
I know that like you definitely missed out on a bunch of issues for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But I know like your canonically lovely boyfriend, Nate, I think that's how he reads comics. I don't think he cares about the plot.
Okay, X of Swords has, well, like, the Hickman X-Men has fundamentally changed the way that he consumes comics, because he's always been very, like, he barely reads any of the words. He just, like, looks at the pictures and is like, yep, this is a good comic. It had a lot of punching in it. Yep, good. He has been on Reddit every single day because I am not giving him enough, like, X of Swords content. I'm just like, yeah, it was good. I liked it. Yeah, it was great.
Is he home right
so
now?
He's on Reddit. He's asleep.
Wake him up.
He's on Reddit every single day.
He's all tuckered out after being on Reddit this morning.
Yeah. r/X-Men, r/X of Swords. Looking at all of the like little Easter eggs and the bits that he's missed and getting like the full story. And then he like wants to tell me all about it. And I'm like,
Wow. You guys should record like a mini review and I'll put that up. I miss.
It would be so long.
I miss Nate so much. I will admit. I haven't been in his presence in like a year.
I know. It's so crazy.
Bonkers. But I'm glad. So he's loving X-Men still.
Loving it. And it was really like, we'll talk about it more, but he got to this point in X of Swords, which I think maybe a lot of people did, where he was like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't like this anymore. This is like too silly. And then the last like three issues just totally blew him away.
Oh, absolutely. It's it really felt like it was Teeny Howard's event as well, with like a little bit of Hickman guidance. And so, we'll get into it in a minute. Some other comics that I wanted to talk about. Sex Criminals, a longtime favorite of the podcast, has finished. Finito. And so, too, we draw close for now on a chapter of the Terryverse. Terry Moore's 5 years has finished, and he's about to start a new series that is still in the same universe. But I want to talk about 5 years, which is his big crossover event of all of his comic properties. I have some graphic novels to talk about. And some manga as well. Siobhan, any big things you wanna do a bit of sizzle for?
Well, I'm reading this massive scholarly book about comics called How to Read Nancy, which I think you'll all be like super into. And then I thought I'd have a, because I'm a bit all over the shop with my reading at the moment, guys. I'm still reading a couple of monthlies, which I'd like to just mention quickly. But also, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the comics that my kids really into at the moment, and give you guys maybe some ideas of some good Christmas presents, some new stuff that's come in that I've put aside for myself for Christmas, and some good ideas for kids in your life as well.
Cool. So we're gonna have some reviews and a little bit of a Christmas gift guide for yourself. Ooh. And potentially children. But let's kick things off with a talk about X of Swords, the big X-Men event for 2020. I guess the architects of it are Jonathan Hickman and Teeny Howard, but it encompassed all of the X books over, I think, 22 issues. So this was not just a weekly event, but some weeks you would have two, even three comics to read. I have burned through all of them in the last fortnight. Highly recommend it. It was extremely expensive to buy the comics that Kings didn't have on Marvel. On Comixology, but it was worth it. I wanted to make sure I'd enjoyed this the way it should be enjoyed. So what the current X books are, Excalibur, which is absolutely the main book that kind of like set this event up. You had what else is there?
Hellions. I don't know why that's top of my mind.
X-Force, Marauders, X-Factor, New Mutants, Hellions, and then there are two solo titles, Wolverine and Cable. So I've read all of those. I legitimately, besides the main X-Men book, I hadn't kept up with any of them. Because if you'll recall, after House of X and Powers of X, I was like, oh, I only want Hickman to write the X-Men books. I like his voice now. I like what he's doing. I don't trust any other writer. Fuck off. And so I just dropped all X books that he wasn't writing. Except New Mutants, surprisingly, I didn't enjoy at all. And he was one of the writers on that. But catching up on everything this month has been so much fun. I'm an idiot for dropping off on these series. My favorite by far is... I have two favorites. Maybe even three. I think the best X-Book team book for me is easily Excalibur, which is written by Teeny Howard. And
the core it's team, good fun.
Yeah, the core team is what, like Betsy Braddock, who is now Captain Britain, and her brother is in it too. You've got Jubilee, you've got Apocalypse. And Apocalypse as a whole is just handled so well in X-Books now. And I'm a bit... The one thing I'm bummed about from the end of X of Swords is that maybe we don't get much more Apocalypse for a while. But who knows?
But I like the idea that he's like gone as a threat for a while, you know, and he'll definitely show up again at some point. But it's nice. I like it when a character leaves and you're like, that'll be like a fun surprise when they show up again.
Yeah, totally. What's cool about the general status quo of the X-Men books now is that like, they're all the mutants are together on Krakoa and they have like a, was it called the circle or something of like the kind of, the leaders of the X-Men. And so you have like, you know, your usual suspects. You've got Professor X, you've got Scott, and you've got Jean Grey.
Magneto.
But then you also have the villains as well, like because all mutants are equal in Krakoa and welcome. So you have a lot of villains that have as much say as the heroes. And they're trying not to be villains anymore. Mr. Sinister, who is just an amazing character.
I'm so obsessed. so good.
But yeah, so Excalibur I really love. It dealt a lot into like the other world, like Captain Britain stuff, and like was very British as a whole, which was fun. Lots mm-hmm. of fun folk characters made an appearance across that. And then, yeah, definitely sets up X of Swords. I really enjoyed X-Force by Benjamin Percy, but I much more preferred his Wolverine run, which is only seven issues in so far. But that starts out being written by our... I know he always says this because neither of us can remember which one it is, but the good Cubit brother. I think it's Andy that I like. I can't remember.
Who knows?
But then the art got really good. And I was like, man, who is this? And it was, I looked back and it was Victor Bogdanovich who did...
He's a great choice for a Wolverine book.
That we loved on New Superman a couple years ago. So Wolverine mm-hmm. I loved, but top of the list. And Jerry Duggan writes it. He also writes Marauders, which I'm like, you know, hot and cold on. Occasionally it's good, occasionally it's bad. I don't know if I love his take on Kitty, but I like his take on Storm and the other characters. But he writes the Cable book, and Cable is a young boy now, like a teenage dude, I guess, who is dating
Cuckoo's
quintuplets, and goes on a date with a different sister every couple issues, and like they're all comparing his dates to each other's, and man, it's so funny and so good. And when young Cable killed old Cable, however many years or you know runs ago, I was like, this is stupid. X-Men books are dumb. And it still is, but I love it now.
But now it's good. It's stupid and dumb, but I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's like there's a real sense of fun in the X-Books these days, which I think has been like kind of missing for a while.
And there's some great jokes.
And it's really good jokes. And just like, the whole sort of the fact that all these characters can be reborn, it kind of lowers the stakes in some ways, or the stakes are just different, and it just kind of means that they can have a bit more fun with it.
Yeah, unless they die on Otherworld, which is where X of Swords was set. So there was a threat to mutants like not being able to come back, although two of them died and have both come back since, so whatever.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing with comics, like, you know, superhero comics. Death doesn't matter. It means nothing. Just tell a fun and crazy story. And
exactly.
I think the strongest thing for X of Swords was for me is that like the series that I wasn't really enjoying, X Factor, written by Leah Williams, who I have loved a lot of stuff over in the past, but I've just found the first three or so issues of that series like a bit too like every character was like Leah Williams,
quippy,
very quippy,
heavy on the quips.
But then that tied into the event, and now the latest issue that came out this week, I read that, and I really liked it. So I guess I'm on board with that series now. And then Hellions, which is written by Zeb Wells. I'm sorry for forgetting the artists on almost all these books, but they don't have... Like, the art team changes every two issues anyway, so...
Yeah.
Which is fair. Artists should get a break.
Yes, agreed. Dance slot.
But they either get a break or I remember their names. That's the only ways it happens. So Zeb Wells is writing Hellions. Hellions is the Mr. Sinister run team of like mutants I've never heard of. Who
the freaky weirdo team?
Yeah, and I was like, who the fuck are these? Like, there's one of them is just like a big egg with legs called
Nanny.
And I was like, I don't like this book at all. But then that tied into the event really well, and now the latest issue, like, I loved. So, whatever. Yeah. I guess I like Hellions now.
Join the freaky weirdo team.
So, which X-Books have you... Are you just trying to keep up with everything secondhand from Nate? Or?
I read all of them. They immediately leave my brain after I finish reading them. But I am enjoying them all in a, like... You know, Alan Moore said something recently about comics, which is always, like, a fun way to start a conversation. But he was like, comics used to be this really disposable medium. It was, like, cheap. It was for the masses. And it's kind of become this, like, monolith to making money and blah, 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 blah. But one of the things I like about the current X-Books is they all sort of work together, but you can really just read them and then move on with your life, you know? Like, they're very fun, disposable, good entertainment. I like them a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
I am reading all of them, but don't ask me any significant questions. Oh, hang on. Why has my recording just stopped? Hold on. Why?
Has it stopped?
Okay, it's working. So it's still fine. Yeah.
It's fine. I'm leaving this in just so people can get proof that you suck at this. And I am just going to just hit the record button on this Zoom recording, just in case.
Nah, it's very smart. It's very smart. It's a good idea.
So, what did you think of X of Swords as an event overall?
I loved it. I loved that whole middle section where it was just dumb competitions and it'd be like, it was a fight to the death. You didn't die. You lose.
Yeah.
I thought that was like so silly and so dumb. I love that. Like, I love Pog or Pog, obviously. That's the like
big crocodile man.
Fully a kind of character that I love. You know, having to do an arm wrestle with magic and just like all these really silly, dumb competitions, all the wedding issues, all of the issues where they're just having a fancy dinner party and everyone's just like in their sort of best clothes. Like, I just thought it was such a breath of fresh air amongst all of the like grim, dark, serious superheroes, a serious, serious business. I just thought it was good fun. And then the end was so satisfying and, you know, you really felt like, there was like this big point altogether. It was getting them from this point to this point. And that was like a really clever, fun, smart, interesting way for that to happen.
Yeah, totally. And it
set
up this new series, Sword, which is coming out next week, which also ties into Empires, which is cool. You very rarely see two Marvel events that have nothing to do with each other both set up the future together. In their own way.
Yeah.
Like the Sword book is like a kind of like intergalactic book with like, I think it looks like it's not just mutants in that lineup, which is exciting.
Mm,
or I could be wrong. That's cool. And it is. Who knows?
Either way, sounds good.
But yeah, no, I think, X of Swords sends 12 mutants with, or 10 mutants, 10 mutants, obviously it's 10 of Swords, not X of Swords. God. Get it right, everyone. 10 of swords.
For crying out loud.
10 mutants with swords. They get sent to Otherworld, which is like a weird fantastical place, because they currently live on Krakoa, but Krakoa used to be Arrakko or Okara. I don't know. Okara. I don't know. Whatever. It splits into two, so they have to fight 10 other people with swords from the other part of where they used to live. And think it's going to be like this big...
They're all like...
What are they
like? Like Apocalypse's ex-wife and children.
Yes, totally. They all have ties to Apocalypse because Apocalypse is a big part of the team. One of the best characters, I reckon, in like the current state of X-Men. Like, I think Mutant of the Year. Can we give... We're not probably going to do an awards episode this year, but let's give Apocalypse Mutant of the Year. Can we agree?
Absolutely. Agreed.
You think it's going to be like this big, like, kind of like shonen manga, like, you know, tournament style thing. And there is like one fight at the start because you think it's going to be like, you know, 20 rounds of mutant versus other creature with a sword. And there's going to be so many fatalities. Mm-hmm. And suddenly after the first one, the second event is not a fight. It's a wedding. And beyond that, it just begets, like Siobhan said, like the competitions just get more and more silly. There's like eating contests and drinking contests and they're all rigged against the mutants. And the main goal for the antagonist, I guess, of this, who is just like, oh, Emma Frost, we've made her, she's too soft now. Let's just make the antagonist of this series just like an evil, evil Emma Frost again.
Every time Lady Saturnine shows up in a book, I spend the first half thinking it's Emma Frost and being like, wow, Emma's really acting out of character. And then I'm like, oh, it's Lady Saturnine.
But her goal was to just... jump Captain Britain's bones, but Brian Braddock. That's the she just
I
wanted a piece
it.
of BB. she wanted to make BB her BB. And I love that. Like that was like if he just fucked her, none of this would have happened. And Wolverine is like,
Wolverine
just
was like,
fuck
just
her, bro.
Do it. And he's like, my wedding vows, I cannot. You're like, man, people are dying. Come on.
I love that. Like, the opposite of cock blocking.
Yeah.
Great shit. He's a good wingman, Wolverine. Just fuck
her. Yeah, I'll say. Just do it, man.
She's good to go. Doug? Not Doug, Brian. Because Doug is the dude who talks to, who has the, what's Doug's real name? mutant
Cypher?
Name? Cypher. Who, and like he's in it and he ends up getting married to like this like terrifying alien and he just
big scary woman who he can't understand
straight away. Yeah, it's great.
He's like, I can't understand you. I love you. That was one of my favorite issues, I gotta say.
Yeah, it was great. It was like there felt like there were stakes in some issues, and then other issues it just felt like this like funny romp. I was very pleased with this. So I look forward to getting into it with Rebecca and Jake next week. I think we're going to break down some of our favorite X-Men events, but this is probably my favorite, I guess, which means that all of my favorite Marvel events now are just whatever Hickman did. but this didn't feel like a Hickman event. They were parts of it that did, especially when it's like, you know, war and pestilence and all, you know, these guys fighting and they're not really fighting with swords for most of the issue. They're fighting with words and lore and history and secret codes. That was definitely Hickman. Yeah. But I think the bulk of the dialogue and character beats felt, I guess, I assume that was Teenie Howard's involvement.
It seems like she was like really central and instrumental, and definitely like a lot of the kind of jokes and stuff felt like her to me.
Yeah. So, who's writing the Sword comic? Marvel Sword. I don't even know.
To be honest. This is the first I've heard of it.
Really, so it comes out. I'm excited. I'm excited because our boy Manifold is on the team.
Oh, I love Manifold.
So who have we got? Al Ewing is writing it.
Of course, it's a Marvel book.
Although that means this is his first kind of like mutant. So it's Al Ewing with art by Valerio Schitti, and you have Abigail Brand, Magneto, Manifold, Cable. And then three mutants who I don't recognize.
That sounds like fun.
Wizkid, Frenzy, and Fabian Cortez.
I may get in trouble, but there are some pretty rubbish new mutants.
Not Goldballs, though.
Maybe they're all old mutants. Not Goldballs. But I would say he's well established.
Yeah, oh, right, of course.
Oh, is he just called Egg?
Yeah, just Egg.
Is he just... Oh, that sucks. Goldballs
is
way fun.
Imagine if you did call your kid Goldballs and then you had to rename it Egg.
Yeah.
So that's it for have you got any other Marvel series that you're reading at the moment? There are a few that I'm keen to check out. I started reading Black Widow, the Kelly DeConnick. No, not Kelly. Is it Kelly? Kelly Thompson. Kelly Thompson.
No. Kelly Thompson. Is it good?
Kelly Thompson. The first issue was really good. I really loved the art. The artist escapes me. Apologies to all artists.
I'm still reading Doom, the Christopher Cantwell / LaRocca one.
Yep.
It's great. I'm really just on a Christopher Cantwell sort of tip at the moment. I really love
He's great.
His Iron Man's really good as well.
Yep.
And he's doing something that I picked up this week, another thing at Marvel, but I can't think of what it is. Let me just have a quick look. But those are really, really great. What else am I reading? Not that much. Oh my god, I just Googled Christopher. Good job, Siobhan.
So he's doing, is he Fantastic Four Road Trip?
Yeah, that's it. I thought that looked dumb, until I saw it was him doing it and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll get that. It's on my to read list this week, but I haven't gotten to it just yet.
What is the Black King or the what's it called? King in Black.
Oh, the King in Black. You know what? I read that last night. Okay, we can talk about that a little bit. So the King in Black is kind of like, it is the, Donny Cates has been like seeding this character for so long.
Oh, it ties into Venom.
It ties into his Silver Surfer Black series that he did with Trad Moore. It's Null, who's the original. It's like the king of the symbiotes or whatever. He's a really, really bad guy. Not just a bad guy. He's like a really, really, really bad guy. And so the first issue is like Null and his horde of symbiote dragons.
Yep.
Have arrived on Earth and the Avengers are screwed.
Okay.
And it's like Eddie Brock thinks that he has this like innate connection with Null, and he has to sacrifice himself to save the world. And so he kind of goes off to do that. But then it turns out it might not be Eddie. It might be his son. But I haven't been reading Venom, okay. So I don't really know why his son has some kind of...
Venom event. I guess Marvel have been doing Venom events, yeah. Like once every year or so. So this ties into
He's
that.
Very popular.
People love Venom.
But you know what? It was pretty good fun. It's Ryan Stegman on art. So like... Yeah. Good, solid, venomy cartooning.
Lots of good
Can't
tendrils.
Get much better than a Stegman. Yeah, exactly.
The tendril kid.
And it's real, like, it's the kind of Marvel event that, like, I kept reading out bits to Nate in a sort of mocking voice, because it's just one of those ones that takes itself very, very seriously, but it's mm-hmm. still pretty good fun. And yeah. I enjoyed the
It takes itself
issue.
Seriously in the same way that like a metal song takes itself seriously.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's like, the darkness has arrived. He is here. Sure. I feel him in my mind, kind of thing. but first issue, totally enjoyable. And it's like, I mean, all of Donny Cates' books are like super selling out at the moment. It's like the highest selling thing, I think, at Marvel. So it's worthwhile checking out.
Go Cates. Hey, speaking of Christopher Cantwell, again, yeah. Just a second. Did you know that he is one of the showrunners attached to the Paper Girls TV show?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. That's cool.
So Amazon are adapting it and turning it into a series. Cantwell being involved, and then one of the writers of Toy Story 4, I guess, is being involved too. I don't know. It could be good. Who knows?
It could be. I just can't imagine how they'd sort of visually pull it off. It's just a very, it's a crazy series, Paper Girls.
My tip is make it half an hour long.
That's a great tip.
Well, like... comic book adaptations should not be an hour long. Give me 1 second.
Nothing
Someone's
should be an hour
on my
long.
Office door.
I only have half an hour.
Give me a second.
Yeah, no worries. Hi. Guys, while Levins isn't here, I'm going to tell you some secrets. I don't have any secrets. My secret is... I'm not very good at improv, everyone. Levins has a big stinky bum, and this will be a good test to see if he listens back to this, because I know he doesn't edit.
Oh, you mean not edit? Okay.
What?
Did you hear me being nice to my daughter?
No, that's nice, though. I'm glad.
So that's it for Marvel talk. No more Marvel talk.
That's it. Marvel's dead to us.
Are you reading any DC books anymore?
I'm reading Green Lantern.
Okay, still good?
Oh, it's super weird. It's so weird now.
I mean, it was weird earlier.
Yeah, yeah. I would say it's reaching, like, new and strange heights of weirdness. It's even less kind of linear than it ever has been. But Liam Sharp is getting the chance to be so weird and out there and experimental with what he's doing that I just really enjoy it. I don't really think... I'm reading some of the... Like, I've read the... Nah, not really. That's about it. I read that question book that Jeff Lemire was doing. That was really good.
Yeah, that was fun. That was
Dennis Cowan. Was it? I guess the trade just came out. I'm not really reading many other DC books, unfortunately.
So let's move over to Image, because a book, that we both enjoyed by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky, Sex Criminals, finished. First, we got the 30th and final issue. But then they decided, actually, we get one more glimpse into the future of Sex Criminals, and they gave us issue 69.
It had to be.
They also gave us a spin-off comic called Sex Criminals Sexual Gary, featuring a character that just loves to fuck no matter what. and I really enjoyed that. That was super funny. Did you read that one?
No, I missed that one, unfortunately.
It's about like a dude who just wants to... have as much sex as possible and celebrate sex, and so he becomes a porn star, but he gets in trouble from the straight porn community for making gay porn, and in trouble from the gay porn community for making straight porn, and then he basically gets asked by America to like save the world via fucking. It's pretty great. Real fun.
That does sound good. I do love Matt Fraction, goodness gracious.
And it was cool to have that as like a kind of point of difference to the almost joke-free final issue of Sex Criminals.
Yeah. It was a bit of a like... I mean, the series obviously means like so much to the people who make it.
Yes.
So it was always going to be a bit of a melancholy, emotional, sort of heartwarming final issue. And it absolutely was.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad I stuck with the entire series. There was definitely a moment, like a few, I'm sure we were covering it on the podcast when it was happening, where I was just kind of like every issue, I was like, okay, that happened. I don't remember anything that happened in the last issue, and I probably won't remember what happened in this issue when I read the next one. I was still enjoying it. I think the greatest story just got lost on me. So this is one, a series that I look forward to one day returning to and reading in full now that it's finished.
Yeah, I think it will, because there were so many hiatuses and it was quite difficult to kind of keep up with it issue to issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think it will read really nicely altogether. And I bet Image will do like some nice big hardcovers and stuff, and that'll be a lovely way to collect it.
What began as like a big kind of like in part like crime caper book and then another like celebration of boning, kind of became like an exploration of depression and anxiety, which is not
where I was.
Yes, exactly. Well, I expected the relationships, but it was like how like your own issues affect the relationships you keep. I think it became a big factor in the...
I would say it's a big theme of Matt Fraction's work.
Yeah,
generally.
Yeah, for sure. But possibly his relationship as well. I think it ended very strongly. It's funny. I wonder if we'll see Chip on art on a book in the future now that he is mostly doing writing.
Yeah, he's a superstar now. I don't know. I hope so, because he's such a funny cartoonist.
Yeah, agreed.
But I guess it takes a way longer to draw a comic book than it does to write one.
Yeah, totally.
So I can imagine he's enjoying not having to sketch quite so much, you know?
Another series that we love that finished was 5 Years. 5 Years was the big coming together of all the books written by Terry Moore. So you have Strangers in Paradise, you have Rachel Rising, you have... Oh, God, what's the other one called? There's Motor Girl, and then there's the one with the Space Lady. Terry Moore.
The Space Lady?
For sure, she's like, you know, she has like space powers.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like called like Eden or Echo. Echo. Called Echo.
Echo, there we go.
And so basically the premise of this is there's 5 years left on Earth if all the characters from these books can't stop a doomsday device from being created by various governments in America and the world. and so basically it's up to various heroines that we've met across all of Terry Moore's books to band together and stop this this item from falling in the wrong hands. And there's quite a big death toll. It's not a very romance heavy Terry Moore book, which was unfortunate because that's like my favorite elements of his books generally, like an insane crazy world that's grounded by a relationship. And you know, there was definitely some of that. And I think as I read this issue to issue, I was a bit disappointed because, I guess when you're balancing so many characters that I've spent so much time with in like their first crossover series, I was like, oh, well, where's this character? What are we going to do with this one? And then when he does, like, you know, an entire issue without any of the characters that I wanted to see in this series, you're kind of like, oh, like you know, there's only 3 issues left. What more could he possibly do with these characters? But it all came together really nicely. And then I went back and reread it from the start. And I liked it. This was good. Good stuff.
Yeah, I definitely fell off it. But I think it's, again, like, I think I would have enjoyed it so much more if I had read his other series. But I've only read Strangers in Paradise and Motor Girl. But that's like, I enjoyed it enough without knowing who those characters were that it's made me want to go back and read those other series more, which I think is like the best thing you could possibly hope for from a crossover like that.
Totally.
Rachel, I now have to...
The characters from Rachel Rising probably played the biggest part in the 5 Year series alongside Kachu from Strangers in Paradise and Tambi. But they didn't do much with the characters of Echo, but a lot of things, like the entire event wouldn't happen without the events that happen within Echo. You meet a lot of the like scientists and stuff like that that are kind of behind the scenes in this series in Echo, and the Doomsday Device itself is directly connected to that. So it was clever. Like he balanced everything really well. And then his next series is going to be featuring one of the characters from Rachel Rising. God, what's it called? New graphic novel series. Serial is what it's called.
Oh, it was...
And it features Zoe from Rachel Rising. And she is the...
And is it going to be like graphic novels rather than singles?
No, so he has another That's graphic novel called Ever. And then and then a series as well.
Okay, cool. Cool.
So he's started a graphic novel series, which has already come out, I think. I just haven't seen it in stores yet. It's called Ever.
Me neither.
It's a new graphic novel. Maybe it's a... I don't even know. Yeah, I'm not sure. Ever. I don't know what it's about. But then, yeah, Serial is the series featuring Zoe. Definitely two things that I'm going to try and read when they're out. I think...
Yeah, for sure.
I think Serial comes out next month, maybe? This month. There you go. And it's got a great cover for number one. Zoe is the kind of, nice. Like, older woman trapped in a young girl's body who's been forced to do many horrible, horrific things against her will over the years and is now a trained assassin.
I love that. I love that as like a weird, specific comic book trope, the old woman trapped in a young girl's body.
Yes, totally.
That's how I feel.
Terry Moore is not a creep, so he doesn't... He won't do gross, creepy things that you would see from other comics that explore the same themes.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
So that's it for my singles reviews. I got some graphic novels, nice. But have you got some singles you want to shout out?
The only thing I really wanted to shout out is like something which absolutely doesn't really need a shout out because I assume you're all reading it, and if you're not, you should, which is Firepower by Kirkman and Robert Kirkman, Chris Samney. And it's just like my absolute favorite thing. It's top of the pile every time it comes out, and it's just like the most sort of... satisfying, enjoyable, sort of almost comfort read. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's just like a sort of straight up, good fun, martial arts, action, family romp.
Yeah, almost like effortless adventure writing. It's super fun.
Exactly. So if you want something that's just like a breeze to read, I really recommend picking it up. We're up to issue 6. So the first... there's already like that prelude trade out, but I assume the next trade isn't far away. So I would keep an eye out for that.
And of course, it's published by Image through Skybound, which is Kirkman's imprint.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Good stuff. So now let's get into some graphic novels and things we've been reading. I want to shout out a previous guest of the podcast, the cartoonist and writer Pat Grant.
Yes, please.
Who published a comic called Blue many moons ago. It came out through Top Shelf, and he came on our podcast, 3, 4, 5 years ago. To talk about, and he kind of mentioned that he was starting a new series. He trying to pitch it to Dark Horse, and the series ended up becoming The Grot. And The Grot is...
I can't make this any louder.
Okay, thanks, Siri. the Grot is a series that's about two young brothers who are making their way to a city that's filled with filth to make it rich. Because in this world, the most, instead of gold, you're looking for algae. You're looking for like something green, basically, like things that are. There's a guide to like how much each thing gets you. I'll try and find the page, but yeah, basically, like this family who make like yogurts using it's called the grot. It's a very kind of like moldy, gross feeling comics. But yeah, like basically, there's. To make it rich in this world, you become like an algae prospector, and so you go to the grot, which is like just this big, disgusting, polluted city where everything is petal powered, and you're trying to make it rich by finding you know green stuff that can be turned into, I don't know what it can be turned into, medicines. I'm not sure, but it's very much about like a you know. Getting swindled and losing everything. It's about like expectations of like the succession of power in family business and like sibling rivalry. Here we go. So we've got 100 milliliters of medium grade algae contaminated with glyphosate. Value $0. 5% of a family fortune. Value $5 million. 3 liters of poor grade algae mixed with ordinary pond scum. Value $50 million. 1 liter of dead algae found last week. Value $0. 10 mil of top grade algae found this morning. Value 600 milliliters. Some old dishwater water from Falter City's worst bistro. Value $0. And like in it, there's like. Like there's like cockfighting and like just like so much like dodgy behavior in it, and it's just the dialogue is so incredibly Australian, but not in a way where it's like, you know, oh, Captain Boomerang said, oh, bloody hell, mate, and then drank a beer. And this is like just like
throw another shimp on the
barbie. Yeah, just genuine Australian dialogue and like elements that couldn't be written by someone that didn't grow up in Australia. It is such a brilliantly drawn and put together comic. One of the best graphic novels I've read this year.
He's such a great cartoonist.
He's so good. The colors are excellent. If you can, read it all for free at, I think it's called like Pat Grant Comics or something. PatGrantArt.com. But the Top Shelf Productions, the graphic novel is gorgeous. Really, really nice matte finish. Beautiful pages and colors within. I could not recommend this more. You would love it, Siobhan. I think it's better than Blue.
Yeah, I know. I've really got to grab my copy.
Blue may be more important to Australian comics, but The Grot, I think. And it's the first of hopefully many grifters comics that Pat Grant is going to do. I can't wait for the next one.
And it's such an awesome time for like Australian graphic novels, especially like, I don't know what's going on with Top Shelf and Australian comic creators, but they seem to be investing in some of our best people. So like there's a new Chris Gooch comic, which I think has already been released or is about to be released, which I'm very excited about. And the next volume of Home Time, Campbell White's series, which I know you love the first volume of
so much. And I have a review copy of Home Time 2 on my iPad. I need to read it, but I'm like, do I want to read it or do I just want to buy the Home Time 2 and read it the way it should be read?
Yeah, it looks gorgeous.
That's like, I love just looking at Home Time, the first one on my shelf. By Campbell White. It's gorgeous, gorgeous comics. So yeah, looking forward to getting into that.
So great time. And it's cool to be able to recommend Australian comics that you will actually be able to access in other countries.
And they're not like,
you know, like it's not just like a little
it's
zine.
Not great Australian comics with an asterisk. You know, like the story is really good, but they couldn't afford the art production that they needed, or like, you know, the art's great, but the writer should not be writing comics. I don't know. but yeah, so that's The Grot. Very, very good comic. Go get it. Teach us how to read Nancy books, Siobhan.
Right. Excellent. So I've been reading this book called How to Read Nancy, The Elements of Comics in Three Easy Panels by Paul Karasik and Mark Newgarden, who are both scholars and academics who teach comics. And it is this incredibly detailed look at Nancy, the comic, which is was written, like, started by Ernie Bushmiller. And, you know, obviously drawn by him for, like, 40 years or something like that. And is one of, like... Nancy is... it's such an interesting comic and it's so strange, but my kid still loves it. And
that's
so many of the jokes are so obscure to him because it's like written during World War II. And so there's loads of stuff about, you know, collecting scrap metal for our boys and all that kind of stuff. But he still manages to love it because the gags are so simple and clear and understandable. So the whole, I'm going to show this to Levins, but other people won't be able to see it. So the whole book is like doing these three panels, just really breaking them down.
So you have like the top half of each double page spread is the three, like a blown up three panel Nancy comic. And then beneath it, it looks like it is breaking down.
So you have the first one is like talking about Nancy, the actual strip. And then it's like the cast, the script. Then it's like going into such incredible detail about like the props and special effects, the fence post, the like all these different things. And it's just going into like, because Ernie Bushmiller was like an absolute sort of maniac, it seems. He started working at a newspaper doing like their comics and puzzles section when he was like 15. He had his first comic published at 15, and he was just like this Bronx dude who just loved strip comics and just obsessed about finding the perfect gag. And one of the reasons that Nancy comics are so interesting and weird to read is because he started with the final panel most of the time. So he'd figure out the joke that he wanted, and then he would move backwards to try and find the best way to get there. And his art is so graphic and so specific that there's no wasted space in any panel. There's nothing unnecessary there. Everything is so specific and so intentional. And this book is like, it's super interesting. If you're interested at all in like the sort of way comics come together, why comics are so great, the sort of elements that make them, that help you read them, the thing that sells the gag, all that kind of stuff. All this is so applicable to every comic book, I would say, not just strip comics. And it's so interesting, and it is academic on some level, but it's incredibly readable. It's not like super inaccessible or hard to read or hard to understand, I would say. It's really good fun, and you learn so much about like these characters that he created and where they came from and his work process, and you can learn about how you read comics and things like that. And that's really fun because they like go into all the details, like they really break it down. And then there's like a moral at the bottom, which is like the lesson that you can learn from this little bit. So it's like, moral, in between two panels of comics, anything can happen, and stuff like that. So it's like this really cute little teaching about all these sort of, all the great elements of comics, and Nancy specifically, which is just one of the all-time great strip comics. So I really recommend checking this out.
Fantastic.
If you see a copy, get it.
Okay. Noted. Yeah, it looks great. It came out in 2017. Fantagraphics published it.
Yeah.
Does it have any? Because who's the current writer of Nancy?
Olivia James.
Does it cover her taking over or not?
Nah. And I would say Olivia James is like, I love the Olivia James Nancy comics, but I would say they're pretty different to what Bushmiller did.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
She's less like, she tends to use like the whole strip to tell like a really interesting joke or something really funny, whereas Bushmiller's were much more absurd and much more like weird most of the time. And it was really like, once you know that he started with the final panel and you sort of go backwards from there, you sort of understand why it's so weird a lot of the time.
Wow, there are some beautiful Nancy collections. There's one called Nancy is Happy.
We've got
Nancy
that one.
Loves Sluggo.
Yeah.
They both look gorgeous.
Nancy is Happy.
And there's
John
Stanley's Nancy book as well. Looks really good too.
Yep. Yeah.
Beautiful hardcovers.
Yeah. Nancy is Happy is like a really great collection. And my eldest, Shatterstar, has just read it until it's falling apart.
Wow. Like, just constantly turning the pages over. Big Nancy head.
Yeah. Awesome. Big Nancy fan.
I might have to add those to my Christmas list for the end of this episode.
Yeah.
We often talk about one of our favorite manga writers and artists, Naoki Urasawa. He has written beloved series like Monster, 20th Century Boys.
Pluto.
In fact, since I last recorded with you, I have finished all of Monster.
Oh, good.
This could be a big chunk of Urasawa love, actually, because I've gone so far into to him. He's just the best.
He's like, so good, man. It's crazy.
And Monster is kind of widely believed to be his best, or regarded as his best, but I loved it, especially I think it ends so strongly. It's about, like, basically it's about a surgeon attempting over the course of many years to track down a serial killer. Who is so much more than... There's so much... Yeah. Like all of Naoki Urasawa's, it starts with a simple idea, but then it just gets so much more complicated and crazy, yeah, and spans so many different characters. So obviously, like, love, three big...
Yeah. Sorry.
You go. You love...
I love other books of his more than Monster, but I understand why it's...
Me too. That's where I'm getting at. Yeah. That's where I'm getting at. So despite... Like, there's a small lull in Monster where... you don't see much of the main characters, and I was confused as to what was being set up, and I kind of dropped off reading then, and then I was like, no, go back there, finish Monster, and then as soon as I got back on the train, I was like, oh my god, this is incredible. Yeah, it ends so strongly. I think it may be my favorite Urasawa ending, just as it's very, very satisfying, whereas 20th Century Boys... I think the weakest part of that series is the ending, but the ride to get there is phenomenal. And so that will always be one of my favorite series I've ever read. I think Pluto, I got to give it to him. I think that is the perfect length, the perfect, like, crazy adventure story and a very satisfying ending too. So that's probably my favorite Urasawa series all up.
Master Keaton's my favorite just for.
Oh God, I'm going to read another one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I went right back. I tried to read his first series, one of his first series, Yawara.
Oh,
Yawara.
Yeah. I didn't realize that had been translated.
It hasn't officially, even been completed unofficially. So I was reading a bad scanlation, from I guess the 90s. It's about a gymnast.
Definitely. Yeah,
man, her outfits are so good. It's so good seeing him draw women's fashion in these books, especially like in the 80s. It's like, a book about like a gymnast. No, I can't remember. I've mixed. I've read
like
so
a
many
volleyball
of his
player or something like that.
That's it. It's his volleyball one. He does a gymnast one later. But there is a completely translated version of the anime adaptation, which I might read.
Cool.
So the full title was called Yaroa, A Fashionable Judo Girl. So it's a judo. Volleyball's another one, and then there's a gymnast one as well. Volleyball, I can't remember. Fuck.
He's very prolific.
He's got a lot of series. Yeah. So I read like the first 20 chapters of that, then learned that beyond 70 through to like 300 or however many chapters there are, it have not been translated. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll stop doing this because I don't want to get super into it and then be disappointed that I can't finish it.
But they're translating so much of this stuff these days. But maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully this will happen soon. But his current book is called Asadora.
I can't believe
it. Have you heard of this one?
No.
I'll just look it up for you. So this is coming out like once every few weeks at the moment. It comes out in a compilation of comics called Weekly Big Comic Spirits. And it started in October 2018. And essentially, this is his take on like the monster genre of not as in Godzilla and like big Japanese monsters terrorizing Japan. But in his world, like the monsters are like it's very, very personal. There's so many characters, and I think what I didn't like about Monster is he doesn't write female characters very well in Monster. A lot of the female characters are very, like, compared to the complexities of the male characters, like, quite dull. Mm-hmm. All of the best characters in Asadora, which is about 30-something chapters in so far. The first volume gets translated to English and comes out in January. All of the main... I mean, the main character is a girl, little girl who we see every few chapters. They jump forward in time. And so you're seeing this little girl grow up, she becomes a plane fighter, and she and this shady old man that she meets when she's younger become like this kind of like secret duo who have to take out this monster before the Tokyo Olympics. It's so cool. It's an amazing series, and I definitely recommend picking up the first trade when it comes out in January. It's called Asadora by Naoki Urasawa. But something you can pick up right now is called Sneeze, and it is a compilation of all these short stories that Urasawa has done for various comic book magazines in not just Japan too. There is actually a Western reading comic that he wrote for Heavy Metal many years ago, included in this compilation. There's like diary comics that he's done that's about how much he loves like rock and roll music, about him like meeting people that that like session musicians that worked with the Beatles, and then he wrote like a Beatles comic, so he gives it to the session musician, and then he sends a picture of it to Ringo Starr, and then Ringo writes back and like gives him a compliment, and so you see like this like real-time interaction that Naoki Urasawa has had while like, you know, holidaying in America. There's like some kind of like strange crime, almost like a little bit of horror vibe, like, so it feels a little bit like reading a Junji Ito kind of short story in a few of them. There's like one that's like that he regards as like his best comic that he's ever done, which is like a Tom and Jerry style cat and mouse cartoony, like fully colorized cartoon that he did. Check it out. It's called Sneeze. Viz published it. You can get it at Kings, you can get it from madman.com.au if you're in Australia, kingscomics.com.au if you're in Australia. But yeah, I mean, like all Viz signature editions, it's gorgeous, like beautiful cover of a little girl sneezing on the front. I loved every little story in this. There's a great you know, Godzilla style comic. Actually, probably my favorite one in this is like you know, monsters terrorizing Tokyo. But they want the monsters to keep terrorizing Tokyo because when they're not terrorizing Tokyo, Tokyo gets visited by so many tourists because of the monsters. And so there's a conspiracy, and it's like the main character is like this like overweight French, you know, monster obsessed guy. It's great. So much fun.
That sounds awesome. That sounds
definitely
so
pick
good.
It up. Sneeze from one of, if not the greatest mangaka of all time, Naoki Urasawa. Read all of his comics is my recommendation.
Yeah.
Stop reading X-Men books, Levins. You've got Naoki Urasawa books in your back catalogue.
What else you got? I thought I'd make a couple of little recommendations of things that have come out that I think would be good gifts.
Okay, cool. So we'll do a gift guide.
And also things that...
In 1 minute? I've got one more comic to talk about.
Sorry. Sure.
So we'll end on a gift guide. I've got one book that I borrowed from the library a long time ago, and I finally read it a couple weeks ago. By the way, if you borrow from libraries now, they don't care. Never return a book. They don't care because of COVID. They just send you an email and it's like, hey, we've renewed your book again. Like, okay, I've had it for 9 months now, but thanks. So Nobrow published this book, it is called How to Survive in the North. It's written and drawn by Luke Healy. And it is his cartoon style is a little bit reminiscent. I mean, maybe this is lazy comparison of Chris Ware, very like small, simple, but effective cartooning with an incredible use of color and great uses of panel work. But this is, it's all set in, the Arctic, but like the Canadian Arctic, I think. Is that a thing that exists? I assume so, right? North of Canada.
It's very cold up there.
And it's set over three timelines. One is set in like the early 1900s. Then there's another one set like 10 years after that with some of the same characters or characters affected by the actions of the 1900s timeline. And then there is a present day timeline of a sad teacher who is reading up on the history of the Arctic exploration that we're seeing in the other timelines, and we get like a glimpse into his personal life as he discovers these things about these people, and upsets some of his co-workers as he almost like that Lisa Simpson learning about Jebediah Springfield kind of thing. These like beloved explorers finding out are kind of dicks. That was a big kiss for me, I assume, from Canonically Lovely Nate.
Passing it on.
Yeah, How to Survive in the North. I don't know if this is readily available. Man, it was such a good read. I burned through it in one night, stayed up way past my bedtime, and just kept reading it. Lovely. Annoying my wife by keeping the light on when she needed to sleep and get up early the next day. Oh well, that's how marriage works. But yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
How to survive? How to survive in the North? Mel, like how to survive a marriage to me? Of three timelines, what would they be? Me and B meeting each other for the first time. Me and B now, and then one of my kids
running a
one of my kids 50 years future. From now reading these reports on what a dick I am.
Really reevaluating his
listening,
relationship.
No, listening to these podcasts, these tomes. Going, wow.
Oh my god.
So that's here, How to Survive in the North, a very excellent hardcover collection by Nobrow. Check it out. Nobrow does some good comics.
Cool.
Gift guide.
Nice. Okay. So this is like half gift guide, half things that my kid has been enjoying lately. First one, I don't actually, I hope it's in print, and I'm sure I've talked about it before. Have I talked about Scary Godmother podcast
Let's
before?
Pretend no. Basically, Jill Thompson, right?
I introduced it to Jill Thompson. It's Jill Thompson, who you might... What's she most
Wonder
famous
Woman.
For? This is the thing that I... Wonder Woman, yeah. But this is what I associate her most with, because this is kind of her creator-owned series where she really just does exactly what she wants. And it's sort of just her voice completely, which is so satisfying to read. And it's this wonderful all-ages series, and I pulled it out for my son for Halloween, because he got really into Halloween this year. And it's basically, if you like things that are spooky but not scary, and maybe you have a kid who's a bit scared by spooky things and you'd like to help them be a bit braver, this is so great. This is so fun because it's about this little girl called Hannah Marie, and it's about her first Halloween, and her mean cousin Jimmy tricks her into going into a haunted house, which is where she meets her scary godmother. And her scary godmother's sort of family of weirdos. So there's like Clackety Bones, or Mr. Pettibones, who's the skeleton in the closet. And then there's Bugaboo, the monster under the bed. And she gets to meet all of these kind of Halloween characters. And there's four different stories in this big hardcover collection that I have. And I think it's available in trade. I hope it is. It's published by Dark Horse. And it's these beautiful watercolored pictures. And it's kind of, it's midway between a picture book and a comic book, I would say, because there's a lot of, like, narration, and it's all kind of in rhyme, so it's great to read to kids as well. But then there's also sort of bits that are more kind of traditionally like a comic book. And it's just, they're all about Halloween and the sort of fun, spooky things that happen on Halloween. And I didn't expect my son to get into it as much as he did. I sort of thought, like, oh, you can have a look at this one. And he has, like, insisted on reading it almost every single day since then. And it's become a big feature of our, like, imaginary games.
That's so fun.
He likes to hide in a... He likes to hide in a closet, and then I have to, like, look for him, and he jumps out and is a scary skeleton. It's good.
How old is he now?
But I really, really rate this for kids. He's 3.5. Cool.
That's great that he's...
And, like, I don't want to... Yeah, look, I don't want to be like, because obviously kids read in their own time and it's no indication of anything, but comic books are so great for literacy. I just can't get over it. He is like, basically reads fluently now and like can read totally independently.
Like words.
Which is like so great for him.
Wow,
yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, man.
That's sick.
Yeah, we have no secrets anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So he really,
it's a dark day when you can't
one.
Spell things out anymore.
Yeah, man. The other thing that I want to talk about is like the All Year Comics mm-hmm. team. So Art Baltazar and Franco, who have been working together since, like, I mean, they've been working together for a really, really long time. But so they're most well known for like Tiny Titans and then their own imprint, All Year Comics. And they've also been doing some other ones for DC lately for the DC imprint, DC Zoom. And my son just eats them up. Like, Tiny Titans is a little bit dated, I would say. I have the collections that first came out when the series was first launched, like 10 years ago. And they still hold up. They're still really good. But DC have also, they're reprinting some of the best bits in these little digest size formats, which are really good. The one came out this week that was like Raven and Beast Boy. So just like the best of Raven and Beast Boy bits.
Cool.
And they're great. They're so good because it's so hard to find superhero comics that are appropriate for kids in that really, really young
Definitely.
Stage. So if you've got a kid who's like learning to read, or if you they want to read some superhero stuff, but you don't necessarily want to,
actually,
you know,
this is great. You,
let him read something scary.
You gave Archie for his second or third birthday a hardcover Batman picture book, and the first page is Batman's parents were shot and died.
I'm so sorry.
And so I think, he didn't read it until he was five. I think we were like, let's read the Batman book. Batman's parents were shot and died.
Sorry. That's so bad. Oh, man. Anyway, the Art Balthazar and Franco books are like, they have a really distinctive art style, which is very, very like appealing for kids. And this book is a more recent one that they've put out called Superman of Smallville. And it's like Superboy comics. It's like when Clark was growing up and it's him at school with Lex and Lana and Pete and all these kind of characters that you'd know if you, you know, watched Smallville or like this era of sort of Superman comics. But it's just good fun. And Shatterstar, his name's Otto. I'm just going to call him Otto. That's his name. Otto just eats them up. And he just absolutely loves everything that they put out. So I really do recommend, if there's a kid that you're wanting to buy some comics for, the DC Zoom imprint is great. And DC have put out, there are these two like little box sets. There's one for DC Zoom and then DC Ink is like their kind of YA imprint. And they've just got like four little digest sized books in them and they're all great. Like I really recommend picking up the little box sets because there's not a bad one in them as far as I can tell. Like the DC Zoom one has like their Kids Swamp Thing series and one of the Black Canary ones, I think, and one other one. And then the sort of Ink one has like a Raven and a Harley Quinn and one other one as well, maybe a Beast Boy one. And they're just really good. DC have been doing a great job with their sort of more all ages offerings. So I'd recommend checking them out and picking those up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then for the
And the like YA novels too.
Yeah, they're great. And for the thing that I have put aside, two more things and then you can talk about whatever you want. So there's also this week came out a new picture book by Neil Gaiman and Chris Riddell. So like two totally iconic British sort of people, writer and illustrator, and it's called Pirate Soup. And it's just a really cute, really beautifully illustrated picture book with like a lovely sort of rhyming scheme and great Pirate illustrations. Stew. Pirate Stew, there we go, sorry. Pirate Stew. So I've already put that aside to pick that up for Otto as well. And it looks great. I recommend that. And then for me, the Christmas present that I put aside for
I've got some kids' recommendations if you want.
Oh, sure. Hit me.
Because the first comic that Archie really, really loved was James Kochalka's Peanut Butter and Jeremy collection. James Kochalka writes either books with his kid, where he like takes photos of his kid and his cat and like draws cartoons around them, or he writes like inane, stupid comics called Super Fuckers. He has like a very, very funny cartoon style that lends itself quite well to great all ages comics or like, you know, very juvenile shit. I like all of that stuff, but his best comic that I always liked was, he did like maybe 8 issues of this comic called Peanut Butter and Jeremy. And it was about a really, really sweet natured cat and a complete jerk crow. And
I'm writing this
Peanut
down.
Butter is the name of the cat. Is the name of the cat. Jeremy is the name of the crow. And Archie, I think it was the first comic that I kind of like left around for him to read. Mm-hmm. And he was so proud of himself when he finished it. And then he read it again immediately. He would have been 4-ish. He was obsessed with it. And he's since read all of James Kochalka's other all ages books, but nothing beats how much fun he had. There's something like as a dad, there's something so pure about like, yeah, it's easy to make your kids laugh, but when something else makes them laugh, especially while they're reading and you just hear them cackling from their beds, at night before they go to sleep, I'm like, oh, that's the best noise in the universe. Yeah. And so, comics are great for that. He is also a big fan of, cause he was so fascinated that I had so many comics with his name on them. When he learned how to read his name. And there aren't that many, like, I guess, I could either go right back and get, and we could read the strip comics of Archie, which is actually a really great idea, and I should do that.
Yeah.
But it was during a time where Archie Comics was while Mark Waid and Creona Staples were doing those, their relaunch, and there was the Jughead books, and there were so many good Archie books. But the book that he really likes And then I would recommend to anyone learning to read and wants a good comic is Your Pal Archie. Did you ever read this one?
No, I think you gave it on the shelf because
you don't like. So it's it was written by Ty Templeton and Dan Parent, and I think he's the series Ty Templeton, who is best known for his work on like the Batman animated comics back in the 90s and 2000s. He's a fantastic cartoonist. He's the series writer and inker, and Dan Parent is the artist who I know you're not crazy about, but when inked by Ty Templeton, it's really good.
Yeah.
And so what it is just like, I guess it's like classic Archie strip format style comics, except stretched out to fill a whole issue. And they're just really fun. The stakes are always really low. It's not dramatic. It's just kind of like fun, good gags. I would definitely recommend that one.
And Archie, they've got their big, their sort of core titles now, which are still very like YA and teen focused, they still put out heaps of digests, which are like so great for like little hands and for just like something for them to rip up and squash down in a bag and like all that kind of stuff. They're very good sort of portable little comics, and Otto started getting into them as well. He's also been getting into my big IDW collections of Dan DiCarlo ones, which is so weird to read like 1950s kind of jokes about boyfriends and girlfriends and stuff like that. But he still enjoys them because it usually ends in a gag with someone like falling over or getting a pie in the face or whatever. So they're good fun as well.
So it's almost school holidays here. We get our big like 6 week school holiday break. And on the day that Archie finishes school, I've got his first short box. And it's packed with like all the all ages comics that I've been collecting over the years. So maybe I can, I'll try and put that list together to share in the group or on the next episode. But from memory, it's a lot of Archie stuff. It's a lot of Adventure Time stuff, regular show stuff. So a few TV shows that he knows already. And then there's like just a lot. There's, I'm so excited for him to read is Goldie Vance.
Yeah.
He's totally at that age now. Cause like, yeah, he burns through the Dogman books, the what's his name, the guy who does
Dave Pilkey,
Dave Pilkey does Captain Underpants, and then he also does Dogman, which is
one of the highest selling comic books in the world. If you count
it's his favorite thing in the universe. Yeah. Archie draws his own Dogman pictures and things like that. Obsessed. It's such a perfect comic to get kids into comics because it's available everywhere. You can probably find one of the first Dogman books for like $5 at a Kmart or a Walmart or wherever you are, department store. They're really funny. Like they are such good gag comics. Definitely recommend that. But I think it's time for, he'd love like adventure comics. We're going to go see this incredible Hong Kong animated animal version of Sherlock Holmes. In Hong Kong, there's a series of books on Sherlock Holmes, except Sherlock Holmes is like a cat or a dog or something. I've never heard of it, but I got invited.
Is it Sherlock Bones? Because there's definitely a manga called Sherlock Bones.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes, Hong Kong, I'll look it up. But I also put in his box, so there's a bit of Boombox stuff, but then there's also a book that we loved a couple of years ago called Space Battle Lunchtime.
Yeah, nice.
Which is about a girl in space in a cooking competition. Just all these series that I've held on to, like, oh no, Archie will love this. Archie will love this.
Yeah.
There's some
it's so fun getting Moon to like Girl and Devil
Dinosaur.
Stuff.
There's some Squirrel Girl. All of my love of choose your own adventure comics, they're all in there.
Yeah. So awesome.
Very, very excited for him. Oh, Simpsons comics. My son loves the Simpsons now, which is the fucking best. Cute.
That's so good.
Yeah. That's a kid's gift guide. What do you want for yourself, Siobhan?
So the thing that I put aside for me is DC have put out a brand spanking new beautiful hardcover edition. Oh no, what did I do with it? I had it open on my phone. Of the Plastic Man series by, let me find, Kyle Baker. There we go. So it's the Plastic Man rubber banded edition hardcover because it comes with like this cute little rubber band around it. And it's like this... It collects the whole thing for the first time, I believe, in one volume. So it's got issues 1 to 20, totally collecting the sort of super iconic, super crazy Plastic Man series. And it's just like, it's pretty expensive, it's pretty pricey, but for what you're getting, I think it's super worth it. And it's like a really beautiful addition as well. So that could be like a really great thing to gift to someone if they like sort of slapstick, or if they like silly, funny comics. That would be a big, big recommendation from me.
Yeah, amazing. God, I have all of the single issues of
awesome
of that run, and I have, I'll try and find it for you because I think they've just reused the art for this deluxe edition. I'll find it for you. I'll put a picture in the Serious Issues Facebook group.
Yeah,
but
cool.
It is like, I think it's just the first six issues in this like cool like vinyl cover.
Mm.
Yeah, it's great. I liked it because it looks like Ren and Stimpy, basically. Like it's like a very, very like goofy, cartoony Plastic Man comic with like just like, you know, no superhero bullshit. It's just like him just kind of like turning into different objects and getting hit a bunch. It's great. Just
having some stretchy adventures with woozy wings.
Real Acme shit. Yeah, it's super fun. That's great. I think that is an excellent gift for yourself, Siobhan. Something that I saw pictures of it earlier this year. I was like, oh, if that ever comes out of Japan, I'll definitely try and pick it up. It is the basically like the first three big arcs of One Piece. They're re-releasing in these awesome box sets. So there's the East Blue, there's Alabaster, and there's Skypiea. And the inside are all of the Tankobon, all of the little like manga, Japanese manga volumes. And it just looks so gorgeous, like excellent art on these box sets. And yesterday I was in Kinokuniya in Sydney and they have imported dozens of them. There's so many on the shelves. They're like, I could get all of them for less than $300 so far. And I was so close to just being like, fuck yeah, and doing it. But I had need to like, so that gave me incentive. So when I stop recording today, I'm going through all the stuff that I want to get rid of and I'm listing it. And if I make $300,
yeah, nice,
that's going to go straight back onto One Piece, a present to myself.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that will encourage me to actually continue learning Japanese so I can read these gorgeous One Piece
that's
volumes.
That's so cool.
Yeah. What I did buy was Sanji from One Piece.
Oh, they're in Japanese.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like only Japanese release. Which is, you know, Japan, Kinokuniya has that amazing all Japanese manga section. Yeah. I just love just wallowing there and just going like, ooh. And
so absolutely.
Yesterday, while I was wallowing, I found the official One Piece cookbook with
cute
Sanji on the One Piece chef on the front cover. And so it's all recipes that he cooks for the Straw Hat Pirates. It rules. It's so good.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so that's an early cool Christmas present to like myself. That. That's it for a brilliant episode of Serious Issues. If you want to come and talk about any of the comics, or maybe you know, recommend some comics to buy for yourself or children, you can do it over at facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast, our Facebook group with many, many active members talking about comics 24 hours a day.
I am so dumb. I just realized that I got a big order from Shortbox, and I haven't talked about any of those, and they're the best comics that I've read all year. But you know what, guys? We're just going to have to wait until the next episode.
Yep. 7 months from now.
So sorry. Yeah.
600.
And they're no longer available.
600 apology messages from Siobhan and me to each other over Facebook. we'll record another episode. But yeah, come join us in the Facebook group. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can patreon.com/Serious Issues Podcast. If you want to give a couple bucks, it goes toward the extra time spent editing, putting up, promoting the podcast, reading all those extra books and talking about them for you to hear. Thank you so much for listening. You can find Siobhan at twitter.com/SiobhanCBG and Instagram as well. Tell her to post more. She should.
I don't.
You can find me at levdog, levdowg. Tell me to post less. if we don't record again before Christmas, have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, have a lovely Christmas, you guys.
It's been a fucking weird year. But I hope you found many good things to read while you were trapped inside and reevaluating your careers. Kind of I have.
Haven't we all?
Thanks so much for your support this year and listening, and we'll see you very soon. Serious.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.